But the fact is that the standard reaction is, well, I grew up with this, and this is what I know, and I don't like anything else.
Father Ivan Moody could be talking about many things, couldn't he? But in this particular instance, he's discussing his own area of expertise, and that's Orthodox Christian music, and especially the reactions by different ethnic groups to the variety that exists.
There's also the opposite reaction, which is what we certainly try to encourage, which is, I didn't know about that. How fascinating. I wonder how that connects to what I do know.
This is Come Receive the Light, and this week we're focusing in on music primarily and talking also with the founder of a society whose basic idea is
that we believe that the sung heritage of Orthodox Christianity is one of the components of its liturgical beauty that is most easily shared with the general public, and therefore should be shared and treated as a primary instrument of outreach and education.
I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. This is Come Receive the Light, and don't touch that dial. There's even more.
But what was so great for me is that whereas most scholars, when they're studying, have to keep going deeper and deeper into their particular topic, thereby narrowing their focus, I was actually had the luxury of keeping my topic incredibly broad.
And the topic she's referring to is the vestments worn within the Orthodox Christian Church around the world. Again, I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Chris, and he'll be along in just a moment with that first conversation. Now, if you're brand new to Come Receive the Light, we have a wonderful website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Check that out and find out a lot more about this ministry. Come Receive the Light is just one of many outreaches that we provide through the website primarily. That's myocn.net. And now, with our first conversation, here's Father Chris.
I'm joined today by Juria, or Presbytera, Krista West. She's the author of Garments of Salvation, Orthodox Christian Liturgical Vesture. Welcome, Krista. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
Why are things like vestments important in terms of our faith, and why do we as Orthodox place such high value on their symbolism?
Well, to begin with, Christians are materialists. We're not always really comfortable with this in the modern world. I have a lot of people come to me and are like, oh, vestments, you know, they're just too much, they're too decadent, or they're too expensive, or we could spend that money elsewhere. But we have to recognize that ours is a incarnational theology, not a representational theology. Hmm. For us, symbols mean things. And it actually helps even talk about symbols in general. You know, in the modern world, we are very accustomed to arbitrary symbols. For example, when you're out driving, you go and stop at the little red hexagon that has the white letters that tells you to stop.
Hopefully.
It doesn't have anything to do with the action of stopping your car.
Mm-hmm.
But in the ancient world, and really the Orthodox Church retains this historical understanding, the symbols actually are full of the presence of that which they signify.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, an icon symbolizes the presence of the saint that it depicts. And so, in that matter, vestments symbolize position and office. They symbolize apostolic succession, the glory of the kingdom of heaven, the wedding garment of the gospel parable, the adoption of men as sons of the heavenly king. These things are important because we believe in the resurrection of the material world.
So we're dealing with an incarnational theology, an incarnational faith. We're not dealing with, I mean, Jesus, especially in our church, is never referred to as he was. At one time,
right.
He was. He is. Now, this is not an academic book. Tell us about your personal connection to the topic.
Well, actually, there's kind of a funny story with this. I am actually an ecclesiastical tailor. This is what I do all day. I actually all this morning I've been drafting patterns and cutting and pulling buttons and galloon and all this. I've been an ecclesiastical tailor for about 17 years. And about 10 years ago, I just started feeling like I couldn't answer my clients' questions. They would come to me with, you know, more technical questions, more rubrical questions, things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Why does the exodus have long, you know, different size sleeves and all this? And I couldn't quite figure out the answers.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I'm a big reader, so I thought, okay, I'll go to the library and I'll get a book. So I go to the library and there's no book.
There's
maybe one or two small little mm-hmm. volumes. There were a lot of volumes on Western vestments. They might have a little chapter on Orthodox vestments. Mm-hmm. But at that point, I had been making vestments for 7 years. And so I read those chapters through and went, wait a second, they're not right on this, and they're not right on this, and they're not right on this, just from a technical point of view.
Okay.
And so I started researching. One thing led to another, and I started writing little articles. And it was actually great because I got to explore vestments from all these different angles. And it also got me writing on a regular basis. That was really important because, you know, like sewing, writing is a craft. You have to practice at it. And so then St. Vladimir started flying me out to lecture to the seminarians and the seminarian wives on vestment history, practical stuff, even like care of vestments, this sort of thing. And so in 2009, Father Chad Hatfield and Father John Baer approached me with the idea of writing a book for St. Vladimir's Seminary Press.
Mm-hmm.
And I just laughed at them. I said, are you kidding me? Because actually, the funny thing is that most people don't know about me is that I only have a high school degree. I got married at 18 and started working to put my husband through school. And so I never got around to getting my degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, there's no way they'd publish a book. I said, you know, you guys don't realize this. You know, I only have a high school degree. And they're like, no. If the academic work is there and it stands up to scrutiny, we'll do it.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, my word. Are you kidding me? So then I really, like, kicked it into overdrive, and I started doing a lot of research. But what was so great for me is that whereas most scholars, when they're studying, have to keep going deeper and deeper into their particular topic, thereby narrowing their focus, I was actually had the luxury of keeping my topic incredibly broad. So I read all sorts of things. I read on natural dye stuff, Byzantine silk economics, you know, St. John of Chrysostom, all of these different things,
mm-hmm.
so that I could create a very comprehensive book. One of the things in the book that's most unusual for this sort of book is that the opening chapter deals entirely with a theology of beauty within the Orthodox Church. And in my experience, it's been a very sort of, it's a very topic of the moment. People really want to understand why do we have these beautiful things in the church.
Great.
So I devoted an entire chapter to it. But there's also a lot of other interesting stuff. It's designed to both be a complete read-through book. You could sit down and read it cover to cover, and also as a reference work. You know, it's the sort of thing you could give as a gift to, you know, a new priest, this sort of thing. But it is actually, I really tried hard to make it enjoyable so that you would actually sit down and want to read it all the way through.
We're going to get it, and we're going to read it. And then I'm sure we're going to have you on the program again, because I'm certain it will bring up some questions. Krista, thank you very much for being with us today. And we pray that you and your family and your work, putting together and sewing the sacred vestments of clergymen across the country and maybe even throughout the world, will be blessed. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
What an interesting topic. And if you feel similar to me as you listened along to that, you want to know more. How about some of the details? Well, they're all in the book, and we have that book available through our website at myocn.net. Again, the title of the book is Garments of Salvation. Just go to the website at myocn.net. Click on the web store link you'll find on the homepage. By the way, any purchase you make through our web store, which takes you eventually to Amazon, comes back to us in the form of a donation. So when you purchase this resource for yourself or someone else, you're also making a donation to come receive the light. We're a nonprofit outreach. And by the way, during the summer months, and we only have a couple of them left, July and August, and only a part of July, we have a donor who has stepped forward and said, I will match any gift made to come receive the light. Well, if you're able to contribute to the ministry at this time, any dollars you send us will be multiplied by two. It's a very special opportunity for us to try and meet our budget, and I hope you'll pray about how you might be involved. Again, the website is myocn.net. Well, our next guest is Richard Raymond Barrett. He's been in the studio with us in the past, and he's back to talk about the St. John of Damascus Society, which he co-founded. And here again is Father Chris.
We spoke about 4 years ago when your dream of an Orthodox choir school was just forming. So I'd like to know what's happened in those years since then.
Well, I've continued to be very active in a lot of different musical projects, especially efforts supporting Orthodox music education and outreach. And those efforts have gone in some unexpected directions. In 2010, I was able to organize a symposium on Orthodox liturgy, music, and beauty on the Indiana University campus, and I was able to bring really an amazing group of people to town from different disciplines and musical traditions. And it was an incredible experience bringing them all here, and I and a few of the people who helped organize it decided that we wanted to keep doing things like it. And so the St. John of Damascus Society was born. And the mission statement of the St. John of Damascus Society is revealing Orthodox Christianity through its sacred music. And we were initially formed to support outreach efforts local to Bloomington, Indiana, sort of a Friends of Orthodox Music organization for the local parish and for Indiana University. But we rather quickly started developing ideas along regional and national lines as well. The basic idea is that we believe that the sung heritage of Orthodox Christianity is one of the components of its liturgical beauty that is most easily shared with the general public, and therefore should be shared and treated as a primary instrument of outreach and education. We've done some workshops and invited talks at churches and universities throughout the Midwest and in the Northeast. We're putting together a journal called Parakritiki, and the first issue will be out probably before the end of the year. We've got an active Facebook page where we try to expose people to the range and richness of the Orthodox musical tradition. We've collaborated with national radio shows like Harmonia in writing segments devoted to exploring the various repertories of Orthodox music. And we're planning some conferences a few years down the road.
Yeah, so you've been busy since those 4 years that we've been speaking about.
Oh, yes.
There's one big project I think you're working on. Tell us about that briefly.
Sure. Well, in April, we unveiled what we're calling the Psalm 103 Project. We're commissioning a collaborative setting of the Vesperal Psalm, Psalm 103 or 104 in the Masoretic numbering. We're commissioning it from six different composers active in different traditions, four of whom were the speakers for the 2010 symposium. Each one of them brings something very different to the table, and each one will set a chunk of the psalm text. Mm-hmm. Then the challenge will be to put the pieces together so that while you have different sounding parts, they will still sound like part of a greater whole. And after we get it composed and published, we'll then go into the next phase where we get it premiered and recorded by a top-shelf vocal ensemble that can handle all the different demands that the completed piece will require. And then the final phase will be to produce a short film that accompanies the music and cinematically explores the psalm's language of creation. Indiana University has also invited us to have them give a public presentation on the project this fall. So there will be an element to this that's consistent with our objectives related to musical education being used as outreach.
Very good. And I understand you're using Kickstarter campaign. People who may not be too familiar with that, but how does it work? And is there any way that people could help you with the project?
Well, sure. Kickstarter is a kind of fundraising called crowdfunding. The idea is kind of a cross between passing the hat and doing a PBS pledge drive. You say to a wide audience on a website, hey, this is what we're doing. Please give what you can if you think that's interesting, and we'll make sure you get some interesting rewards when we've completed the project, with different rewards for different levels of pledging. Mm-hmm. You then get maybe a few hundred people giving a relatively small amount of money. The average Kickstarter pledge is something like $69. The theory is that this is more effective than trying to get one or two people to give larger amounts, and it's also set up to take advantage of one's networks in social media, like Twitter and Facebook and so on.
Okay, let me ask you one final question. Where can our listeners go to learn more about the Damascus Society?
Well, the listeners are invited to visit our website, www.johnofdamascus.org, and to like our Facebook page, which is titled simply the St. John of Damascus Society. And there are more details at both of those places.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Father.
If you're a singer or just a lover of wonderful sacred music, then I'm sure you found that a very interesting conversation. And again, the website is johnofdamascus.org. That's johnofdamascus.org. And you'll find additional details on that website. A link will be on our website at myocn.net. This is Come Receive the Light, an outreach of the Orthodox Christian Network, sharing the faith of the Orthodox Church with the world through our website and taking a look at our various subjects through the lens of the Orthodox Christian faith. To wrap up our broadcast today, we're going to continue on this theme of music and talk with Father Ivan Moody of the International Society for Church Music. And let me just share real quickly that their website is simple. It's isocm.com. You'll hear that again in a moment. Father Ivan is the board chairman of that society, and he's also a professor of church music at the University of Eastern Finland.
Welcome, Father.
Thank you very much.
There's so much I want to talk to you about today, but let's start with the International Society for Orthodox Church Music. Father, I confess to you, I've never heard of it before, so I want to learn a lot about it. The ISOCM, another acronym. Tell us about the group, Father.
Well, the acronym is not very good because you have to say ISOCM, and that could sound bad. But the society is very good. We founded the society in 2005. And therefore it will be 10 years old when we have our next conference in 2015. Mm-hmm. And the principal aim of it was always communication between Orthodox church musicians. You know, if you have a conference of church musicians in one country that has a very strong musical tradition, you very often end up going around in circles or having very heated arguments. Mm-hmm. We thought that a good way to bring scholars, performers, enthusiasts, musicians, priests, singers, interested parties of all kinds together would be to have such a conference outside of such a country. And Finland, by most people's perception, is such a country. Finland does have an Orthodox population, but it's small. And it has a feeling of being neutral, so you don't mm-hmm. have turf wars in musical terms.
I hear. So the society is based in Finland, and it holds yeah. its conferences there. Is the yeah. audience primarily European or not?
It is completely international in scope. We have members from all over the world, from all over Europe, from Japan, from Mexico, from many from the USA, many from Canada, Russia, Ukraine, literally all over the world.
Okay. Now,
and this is one of the great things about this society, that we bring so many people together.
Well, I think it's also important to note that the members and the participants at the conference aren't only Orthodox Christian people. So why is it so important to include the non-Orthodox and even try actively to actually engage them?
I think we Orthodox do a very good job of hiding our light under a bushel. It seems to me that it's so often the case that a person is converted to Orthodoxy almost by accident. And I'm not saying that society has a proselytizing role at all, but I don't think, on the other hand, that we should hide what we do. People are attracted by the beauty of the church, by the beauty of icons, by the beauty of the music, by the beauty of the ritual. Mm-hmm. And these are three things we can show very, very easily if we ask people to come and see, as the emissaries from St. Vladimir did to Constantinople. And, you know, it's amazing when I see what happens during our conferences, and not only, in many other circumstances in which I've been involved, it's just amazing to me how simply experiencing Orthodox worship can turn somebody's life around, can change it completely. Even if they don't become Orthodox, it can just have such a profound effect. And I then wonder, well, why don't we show them our music? Why don't we show them our icons? Why don't we show them our worship? Why don't we talk to them? And one of the key points is talking.
Well, let me ask you this. How different are the various musical styles of Orthodox theological worship? I'm familiar with the Byzantine style.
Right.
That's what we were taught at seminary, although I honestly have trouble now remembering all those different tones. I try my best.
Right.
But tell us a little bit about the musical styles that are there.
Well, the musical styles vary enormously, but they have many things in common. As I said, if you were used to Georgian Orthodox music, you would have a very, very different idea of what Orthodox church music was than if you had grown up or been taught in the Byzantine tradition. And then there's the whole question of polyphony. If you add harmony to the music. So there's the whole Russian tradition, the tradition from the 18th century onwards, and do we consider that to be legitimate, or is it corrupt and westernized? You know, many different questions arise. My personal observation is that we very often overlook the question of taste in Orthodox Church music. Taste, I mean, in a very general way, taste is formed by the culture we live in. So that obviously has a very important role to play in countries such as the U.S. and other Western countries, where we need to decide what we're going to do about the surrounding culture, if we're going to adapt to it or adapt it to us, or just ignore it. All these things are relevant. But the fact is that the standard reaction is, well, I grew up with this, and this is what I know, and I don't like anything else. Mm-hmm. There's also the opposite reaction, which is what we certainly try to encourage, which is, I didn't know about that. How fascinating. I wonder how that connects to what I do know.
Well, let me ask you this. Throughout the course of history, at least from my perspective, I've noticed that the church, in its when it moves to a different area or in some locations, it becomes a national church. And I'm wondering now, as the church becomes, as the world becomes global, and the internet opens up and Facebook and all these things that allow us to connect to one another, are we seeing something of a change, of an effect upon a so-called national language in worship?
Though I'm teaching in Finland at present, as we've already mentioned, I actually live, when I'm not in Finland, in Portugal, which is where my family is, and I have a parish here. And my parish is multi-ethnic. It means that we have many different musical traditions and people of different traditions singing at the Kleros. And we've found a way to make that work. We use various languages, and I've done adaptations of different traditions, Byzantines, Narmani, Serbian chant, and it all works. It all blends into a whole. That's not necessarily possible in every situation. I would be the last person to advocate diluting a national tradition. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing worse than the Byzantine chant sung to a bad adaptation in another language, for example.
Yes.
But I do think that the more people know about other traditions, the more intelligently they will relate to their own.
So you are a professor, as we said, at a Finnish state university that has a department of Orthodox theology. Tell us a little bit about the department, because I'm sure those of us here in the States, Finland has a very small Orthodox population. The fact that there's actually a department of Orthodox theology, I think, is a great thing. Tell us about that.
Well, the university we're talking about is the University of Eastern Finland, mm-hmm. which was created from two universities, one of in Kuopio and the other in Joensuu. And Joensuu is in Karelia. So it's in the Finnish part of Karelia, right next to Russia. So there's a large Orthodox population in that area. And the other institution of great importance in the town of Joensuu is the Orthodox Seminary. So you have the largest concentration of Orthodox in Finland, in Joensuu, in fact. And the Orthodox Theology Department is one half of the School of Theology, because there is also a Western Theology Department, mm-hmm. because the largest church in Finland is the Lutheran Church. And some of the teachers are shared between the two departments, teachers of church history, for example. Others are specific, of course, in terms of practical theology or systematic theology. There are specific Orthodox professors for those disciplines. And the Orthodox department has a church music section, of which I'm professor, and my colleague, Deacon Petri Nykänen, is in charge of the what I might call the more practical part. He does the choir teaching and many, many other things. In fact, the department would fall apart if he weren't there. But the Western Theological Department doesn't have a music section. So the music part is exclusive to the Orthodox Theology Department.
And how many students do you affect there, Father? How many students are in this department or come to your classes?
I can't tell you how many are in the department as a whole, because there is overlap, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure from year to year how many are there. Mm-hmm. The church music department is small. Mm-hmm. I can't pretend it's larger than it is.
Yes.
And I've been teaching a master's course, which has 8 students on it. Master students and 3 doctoral students.
Well, it's really amazing. Thank you so much for speaking with us today from literally across the ocean. As you said, you're in Portugal right now. For listeners who'd like to learn more about ISOCM, maybe even make a trip to Finland for the 2015 conference, I'd love to be there. How can they learn more, Father?
Well, the best way is through the website, which is www.isocm.com.
Very good.
And we post regular updates there. You'll see information about all the conferences we've already given and all the activities we're involved in. And it would be wonderful if you could come in 2015. We'd love to see you.
Very good, Father. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Father.
You know, I've been to that website at isocm.com, and there's some wonderful music available to you there. Just click on the videos and then the conferences, and I think you will find your way through to all of the music they have presented at their various conferences. That's isocm.com. There will be, again, a link on our website at myocn.net. Please remember that for the next 6 weeks or so, a donor has stepped forward and said that they would match any gift made by, well, listeners like you to the ministry of the Orthodox Christian Network, so your contribution will be doubled. Go to the website, click on the Donate Now button there on the homepage. And join us next week at this same time when we'll be back with another series of conversations on Come Receive the Light. Thanks, as always, to our executive producer, Ann Dankert. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. I'm Mike Trout, reminding you to always have faith in what you listen to.